Well, we have a lot of intro stuff, so
right.
I don't think it'll be a problem.
No.
No, that's fine.
Okay, well, I will call the meeting to order then. Thank you, everyone, for coming. I appreciate that. So, let's see, we'll do... I think I'm going to wait for just a minute for introductions, because I think we have some more people coming in, and I think that'll just save maybe a little bit of redo. Okay, so the public... The Open Meetings Act rules are in Braille and print, available in this room if you would like to review those. Those are the rules that govern how the board conducts business. There are also Braille and print agendas. Those are by the door, I believe. There's coffee in the back of the room, and I believe the caffeinated is on the left.
They're both caffeinated.
They're both caffeinated. No. Okay, drink from the one on the left, because the one on the right tastes nasty.
That's on public record, by the way.
I tried them both. I don't know what the difference is, but that's just me.
Born on date.
Okay. Lunch will be served downstairs, yes?
No, across the hall.
Across the hall, okay.
Room 4B.
4B. So it's just across the hall, and it is... soup and assorted sides and fabulous desserts from our, I guess they don't have a name, our youth group. I don't know.
Jane's Posse.
Jane's Posse.
Shane.
Oh, Shane.
Oh, that's a good
okay.
name.
That works. We have set aside times for public comment, and I will take names of individuals who wish to speak at that time and then call on you in that order so that we can keep things orderly and on track, and so everybody who wants to have a turn to speak can do that uninterrupted. If we need to go over, we'll see how time is going, but that's a possibility. Otherwise, if we're running late, I may have to just call it. So Kathy's going to tell us about proof of publication.
Yeah, the notice of the meeting was published in the Lincoln Journal Star, on the state government calendar, NCBVI website, NFB Newsline, radio talking book, and it was sent to ACB President, NFB President, and the NCBVI listserv.
Thank you. Thank you, meeting. Are there other announcements? Anything? Yeah. So, okay, well, let's start on introductions then. We'll start up here. I'm Julie Johnson, chairperson of the Board of Commissioners, and I'm from York, Nebraska.
To the left.
Sure.
Robert, go ahead, Robert.
I am Robert Newman, and I'm new on the board. It's going to be great, and I am from Omaha.
Mike Hansen, I'm from Lincoln, Nebraska, and I am the National Federation of the Blind designee.
I am Jim Urock, Omaha, Nebraska, and I am the designee of the American Council of Blind in Nebraska.
I'm Becky Reakin, I'm from Kearney, Nebraska, and I'm also new on the board.
All right. Good job.
Pearl Van Zandt, Executive Director. From here, Lincoln.
Kathy Stevens, Administrative Assistant from Lincoln.
Hubert Paulson from Lincoln. I'm doing the recording.
And Terry Brinkwater, President of ACB Lincoln Chapter.
Mark Bolger, American Council of the Blind, Omaha.
Tony Olivero, First Vice President of the NFB and Lincoln Chapter, and Board Member NFB Nebraska.
Karen Anderson, board member of NFB of Nebraska.
Katie Reakin from Lincoln, student division secretary of NFB and NFB Lincoln chapter board member.
Bob Eaton, deputy director for NCBVI, deputy director of Lincoln services.
Connie Daly, district supervisor in Lincoln.
Wes Majerus, Technology Program Manager, based out of Lincoln.
Antonio Aguilar, Secretary, Nebraska Business Enterprises Program.
Jeff Haldeman, First Vice President, National Federation of Wine of Nebraska.
We're in introductions, folks. Thanks for coming. We're to Glenny, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Carlos Cervan, Nebraska Commission for the Blind Deputy Director of VR Services.
I'm Marty Ackman. I'm a client. I'm from Lincoln's office.
Okay, my name is Carol Jubalisco from Omaha. I'm Barbara Epworth.
Johnny Wiley, Omaha, Vice President of ACPN.
Katie
King,
Omaha.
Okay, thanks. That's everyone.
Thank you. Okay. All right. So, are there any other announcements? Okay. So, we'll move on to our first agenda item, which is approval of the November board minutes. And for review, those minutes are available on the website. Well, the draft minutes are available right now on the website. All commissioners have had the opportunity to review those and make any corrections.
Okay. We'll try to change that. Thank you for telling us.
Can you all hear me now?
Ooh.
Yes.
Stereo.
Okay. Thank you. Our first item is approval of the November meeting minutes. Those draft minutes are currently available on the website. All commissioners have had the opportunity to review those and make any corrections. So is there a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
Have a motion?
Second.
And a second. We'll have a roll call vote to approve the November meeting minutes. Robert?
Yes.
Okay. Mike?
Yep.
Becky?
Yes.
Jim?
Yep.
And I vote yes. So the minutes are approved. Our next item is, I just lost my place. I think it's the focus topic?
Yes.
Okay. And is Bob Deaton facilitating that? Carlos? It doesn't matter. You guys figure it out. Tell us about low vision services at NCBBI.
Did you want to go through the agenda?
Hang on just a minute. Need a microphone, Bob.
Can you pass that to me?
Thank you.
You got it?
Momentito.
Thank you.
You have the material that was sent to you. Carlos collected. There were four documents, I believe, and then Robert had some questions and comments, and I tried to respond to that. Pearl and I did together, I see. And you should have gotten that a couple of days ago. I don't want to spend a lot of time on reviewing low vision services.
Excuse me, can you in the back here, Bob?
No. I don't think the microphone's on.
Mic's not on, Bob.
Not on?
No.
No.
You turn it on.
Did you turn it on, Julie?
I did, because it has feedback sometimes.
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't know that.
Sorry.
That's okay.
You're turned on.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm just going to make a short statement. You know, when I think of low vision services, I think of two things, okay? Two basic issues. The first thing is how well do remaining vision, functional vision, work with in real life? You know, at what point can we function satisfactorily with low vision, and at what point do we need non-visual techniques? And I think that is part of our responsibility to help people come to that understanding so that they are maximizing the best of both sets of skills, visual and non-visual. The other issue is aids and devices. What kinds of aids and devices will enable people to use the remaining vision to the best maximum degree, particularly in academic and employment settings? So those are the two main areas that I see the most attention being given to. We do have a couple of people here. Do we have Antonio and somebody else too? Is that right?
Yes.
Antonio, Marty
Axman,
and then also
Well, and I don't want to cut into their time too much, because I'm sure you want to hear their stories. I don't know who would like to go first, Antonio or Marty?
Antonio has the lead, so.
He has to leave?
Yeah, soon. So.
Okay, well, we'll let you out. And Ken, Antonio Aguilar. I'll let him introduce himself. There he goes.
Hello, I'm Antonio Aguilar. I'm a visually impaired blind vendor. And as he was stating, talking about these services, at what point do you use your vision and your not vision and your low vision? In the cafeteria where I work, I use a lot of my non-visual skills because I just, you know, have very low vision. And the remaining vision that I have, I still can use that as well to my benefit. The cafe operations are daily, they change daily, so your requirements change daily. And I really got a lot out of the program that I'm in, the school. You know, when I first lost my vision, I'm like, what am I going to do? I graduated the school, and now I have a job. I've been there 2 years, and I'm doing rather well. And I have the techniques that I was taught at the school and the techniques that I learned on the job training. So I think a lot of these services that we do get for low vision folks, it's just invaluable. You know, I don't know when or if I will ever lose all my vision, but I know that I'm prepared for you. Thank God for these services here.
Could you talk, like, specifically about what low vision things you use and how you use them and how you know when to... how you personally decide, do I need a low vision thing, do I need a non-visual thing?
Yes, and like I said, that's like on a day-to-day basis, because some things I can do with what vision I do have left, but then, like my computer work, I have to use JAWS. I can't use my vision to look at the computer screen, because on my particular computer, the font size doesn't get big enough for me to read it. So I use JAWS a lot, and deciding what I do, like, I don't know, it's hard to explain. When I'm serving customers, I have this white pen pad on the counter, and if somebody puts an egg down on it, it blends right into the so then I don't see it. so then that's where your non-visual techniques got to come in. You know, you ask the customer, you know, what do you have, and so forth.
Antonio, what yes. about money identification? How do you tell
I do have a money reader, and I do have a money reader app on my my Android phone. I basically put the bills up to my face, and I can recognize them.
So then, Antonio, it's safe to assume then that the government redesign of the $5 bill, the $10 bill, and all of that as far as the improvements in the techniques, and not the technique, but as far as the font size on the currency has helped.
Yes.
In your case.
Yes, in my particular, the tens and twenties still give me problems because they're so similar.
Right.
And with the new $100 bill, you know, those are very easy to distinguish even by feel.
Yeah, I've never seen one. Let's see. Do you have a sample?
Tony. Tony, it's Robert Newman. So, could you help us understand, kind of like, how did you figure out which kinds of devices would be right for you? You know, staff person. Did you go on, maybe start with a staff person, maybe go on to a low vision specialist? Just how did it come about that you made your choice?
To use
the devices that you chose to use.
A trial and error, basically, Robert. You know, I use my CCTV a lot to do my P&L statements and stuff like that because it blows the fonts up incredibly large for me to read. And like I said, it's a day-by-day thing. As a challenge comes up, you know, it's either a non-visual technique or remaining visual technique that I use.
I have a further question, Antonio. Did the commission staff play a part in you figuring that out? Obviously, day to day.
Yes.
But what did we work? Did we work with you on some things to figure that out?
That was all. The technique was all basically learned at the school.
Okay.
You know, from the cooking classes and, you know, those techniques that I learned in that class, along with the woods class, those techniques I learned in that class. And
I think basically what we're trying to get at is, you know, the low vision devices you use.
Yes.
How were you introduced to those? What was your first exposure to those devices?
At the school.
At the school.
At the center.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like your CCTV?
Yeah.
And those? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, Monica Tripp and I think it was Nancy Floral that actually did bring me the CCTV itself. But I had worked with them at the school.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. And I'm not cutting you off, but thank you for that.
Yes, thank you. And I don't want you to feel like we're interrogating you.
No,
that's kind of a lot of questions. But
yeah, actually we are. We just don't want to come across that.
Yeah, I am so kind of, to me, the core of our topic is how do you determine, you know, like Bob was saying, the two things, the technology, but then which skill set to kind of draw from and how do we arrive at which is better for what situation. And
I think it's a personal thing.
Yeah.
If you know, I'm a pretty confident person. I'm sure all of you in here are pretty confident people. I mean, it's if I know in my mind that I need the non-visual techniques, I use them. You know, I don't try to push myself to seeing or, mm-hmm. you know, to try to see something that I know I can't. It's acceptance.
Right. But you know you have other options.
Yes.
So you don't feel like you have to push yourself.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a really important key thing.
Tonio,
yes.
The quick question, just a clarification. When you, I'm sure I know what you mean, but just for clarification for the record, when you're saying school, you're meaning the training center in the
yes.
located in this building?
Yes.
Okay.
Sir.
And not the school for the blind and...
No, the Nebraska Commission
right.
for the Blind.
Okay.
Here at the...
Right.
It's something that it's very common people will say the center, meaning the whole agency. And, you know, so we kind of get used to that. And
or the school because you take classes.
Yep.
Yeah,
right.
You have home teaching and consider it
right.
the schools.
Yep.
So there's no one right way to call us.
Well, I was in my 40s and going back to school.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
A non-traditional
yep.
student.
Right.
Yep.
Yep.
As well.
There you go.
So, but I would like to say that that all the things that I did learn at the Commission for the Blind, I use, and I use in the business that I have. I was very fortunate to enter the NDE program, which has been very good to me, and I've learned a lot. from that experience. And I don't know, I'm just going to keep moving forward with it and use my techniques as I can.
Mm-hmm. Tonio, pardon me. One other question for you. You've told us that your time here at the training center or at school provided you the skills to do your non-visual techniques. It introduced you to a lot of the low vision technology that's available, whether it be high tech or low tech. I guess the most simple test is, can you see something enough or not to do what you need to do? But was there any instruction you got or any tips or tricks other that you've learned from the commission staff along the way to help you in aiding when you're doing things, when you're trying to decide if you're going to do something visually or non-visually? Or is it just as simple as, I can see it, yes, or I can't, no, and that's it?
It's basically that simple. I did learn all the techniques from, like I said, from each class that I had at the center. And it is just a snap judgment. Can I do this? Can I not?
Okay.
I wondered, too, if some of it is what's handy. I mean, you mentioned mm-hmm. that you have a bill reader and you also have an app on your phone. But I'm guessing the reason that you just hold the thing up to your face is that's quicker. You don't have to pull a gadget out.
It's a lot faster.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I have enough vision left to where when I hold it up that close,
yeah.
And it's kind of like a focus thing. I back and forth, and then I can read it.
Uh-huh.
Okay. But when you're at my particular business, you're serving 150 people in 2 hours.
Right.
You got to be quick. Yeah.
Quickness is,
with efficiency,
kind of a must.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Good, Tony.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being here.
Stephanie Wagle and Zach Hay just walked in.
In a second.
I just wanted to underscore something Antonio had said as far as determining what worked best for him by trial and error. And I just want to say that's generally the approach that we use in the field, because we are not low vision specialists. We do not diagnose, we do not prescribe, we don't measure a person's acuity or functional vision in any way. So our approach basically to introduce people to the types of resources, devices that might work for them. And whether or not they do is pretty much a personal determination. Does it work or not? For those people who feel like they need to explore more, there are low vision evaluations, but then those are provided by people who do have the training and the medical background. Okay, who would like to go next? Stephanie? Or?
Yeah, I'll go.
Okay.
Hello, my name is Stephanie Wagle, and I was diagnosed with Stargardt's disease when I was about 16, and at that time, a center counselor took my case, and I've been offered many, many tools, as I have peripheral vision, but no central vision. So now at 25, I'm a Braille reader. I also have a closed circuit television for mail that I use. I have a screen reader on my computer, which I use every day, but I also use a docked screen enlarger. So I find myself using my blind alternatives and then my low vision alternatives and halves depending on what I need at that particular moment. I also use a cane, and I find that the center has been very open to what I need, and it's always been my choice. I did choose to go through center training, and during that time, during the day, I would wear sleep shades and do everything without my residual vision, and that was in 2010. And then when I went back to college, I, at that time, knew how to use a cane and was a Braille user after going to the center. But then I still use my vision with my closed circuit television for for short reading, like reading mail. But if it's anything long term, I use my screen reader and or Braille. So I find that the center has been very accommodating to both the blind alternatives I want and the low vision alternatives that I also use. So thank you.
Question for you.
Yes.
So comparing before you went through center training to after completing your 6 to 9 months or however long, did the way you use your vision change?
Oh my goodness, yes. Let me think of an example. There's so many. Well, and actually, knowing that I was going to be speaking here today this week, I was putting up shelves in my room using my toolkit. I couldn't help but think about Mike Rains and the training in his shop class during my training, which was all under sleep shades, of course, because it's center training. And I wasn't actually nervous about it because I felt like I was in very good hands, but I still had no idea how to use anything, from a click ruler to the power tools, and I ended up making 3 joy boxes in the end through his instruction. And I was putting up these shelves this week, like I was saying, and I couldn't tell which was the quarter inch nail bit with my vision, but I could with my non-visual skills. So if I hadn't gone through training, I would have had to ask one of my roommates or, gotten a reader, and readers are awesome, but it was great to, in that moment, just be like, I think this is a quarter inch nail bit based on how many I handled in his class. And I also didn't have to depend on my vision for that project because I had the blind alternatives to fall back on. Mm-hmm. Did I answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, wonderful, thank you.
Was there any special assistance in figuring out what to use the low vision devices and training with it?
I've always been given so many options. It's fun to look at my desk because there's a Perkins Brailler there, there's a closed circuit television there, there's a Pebble, handheld, screen reader device. And all those tools have been offered to me and have been, have been demonstrated for me and actually given to me on a trial basis for me to decide whether it works or not. I mean, I have a number of things in my room, but I've been given many, many things throughout the years, and I've chosen from that selection for what actually I use on a daily basis. Like, the closed circuit television was given to me just to try out, and I ended up taking it to classes with me, and now it's just set up in my desk or on my desk at home, and I use it all the time. I'm a Mary Kay consultant, and that's a lot of fine print that I'm reading, but it's short, it's like little paragraphs, and I get fatigued after reading about 5 minutes. But when I'm just reading ingredients, I can just turn my closed circuit television on and read it and go. So my counselors have always been very open, does this work for you? Does this not work for you? And if it does, we offer it for you. We'll provide it for you.
Well, Stephanie, any comments or suggestions were made, maybe try this distance versus that, or here, pay attention to where the lightings come from, because maybe you were talking about glare, or maybe something about contrast. Did you figure that all out on your own, or did someone point out some pointers, suggestions?
All along the way, there's been pointers, especially with my condition, I'm extremely light sensitive. So that's been a factor in the alternatives that I use. And even this week, I was with, last week, I was with Nancy Kaufman, and we were working on JAWS, but she was also talking about the low vision options on my computer as well. And one of the things she did suggest is turning down the contrast on my computer, which I'd already done, but we talked about just how to adjust that in the future and how that can help me use my vision for a longer amount of time, but also, you know, using the JAWS too at the same time. I actually usually have my screen reader and JAWS on simultaneously. So, you know, she didn't know if I had the dimmer on or not. And I was like, oh yeah, actually, that had been suggested to me already. But she made sure that I had that in place because she knows about my condition and that I am light sensitive. So that has been a conversation that came up that time, but it's come up several times.
Good job. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you so much.
So when are you going skydiving again?
Skydiving? When are you going skydiving?
Never.
She's going to go skydiving when she can talk the dog into it.
I was just there for their Christmas party last weekend, probably sometime this summer. So it's been 5 times.
Yeah, low vision techniques there too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, I do. Mm-hmm.
You can see how close you're getting to the ground.
Yeah, that's right. I don't use my cane exactly, but I do. I do actually, someone on the ground talks to me, so I have them talking me down and actually even telling me at what point to flare, which is when you pull down your parachute. And it's been really exciting figuring out, first learning about the sport and then implementing the alternatives, because you know, they told me, oh, it's going to be really time intensive. I'm like, well, that's the name of the game when you're blind. You have to put in the extra time to learn the skills and then implement those blend alternatives. But I've taken a break with last semester being my last semester of college. I haven't skydived since August, but yeah, not the last time.
You've got your priorities right. I'm glad to hear that.
Yes.
You didn't take a break from school to do skydiving.
No. I graduated in December, and I don't plan on going skydiving again until sometime over the summer. I'm definitely not done. It's too much fun.
Well, congratulations on your graduating.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you. I'm super excited about it.
Major in skydiving. There you go.
Yeah. I think Bob had another question or comment for Bob, were you going
to
ask?
I believe we can go to Marty now.
Oh, okay.
Okay. You're done hearing me talk? No. Just kidding. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Morning. Boy, listening to the other guys speak, I feel like I'm sort of the odd man. I've been with the commission since 77, so I've watched it grow, I've watched it change quite a bit. When I started college back in 1977, all we had for tools was a audio tape recorder and a special device for playing both sides of a tape for audiobooks, and that was not easy. I admire everybody that graduated through college that I went to school with back then, because I dropped out. I have a lot of history with the commission, like I said, back in college in 77, and then in 84, I started back to get some training for missionary training, and the commission helped me out by allowing me to build my own CCTV, which was about half the price of the going CCTV at the time. And the reason I did that was because I was going to the mission field, and what I built it out of was a standard video camera and a high resolution television set. And it was it allowed me to not only serve as a CCTV, but it also allowed me to do video of the tribe and where I was working and all the stuff what I was doing. So that was great. And back then it was Dale Hayes I worked with, and I've never been through anything other than the school for the visually impaired in Nebraska City. My eyes went bad when I was 12, and I've been legally blind ever since. And I went to Nebraska City School for the Visually Impaired for 3 years, and then, like I said, finished up high school through mainstreaming and went into college, got married, went to the mission field. While I was there, it was during the time when Noriega was in power, and there was a big tension at the time. So. I was actually accused of being a spy, which was rather amusing because the only blind spy on the whole CCIA. But I was deported and I lost all my equipment because I had to leave the tribe and nobody else could get back in there right away. So I came back to the commission. They helped me out again, and at that time I was able to rebuild another CCTV and get some more help with the computer. And so that allowed me to continue on. I went to Wisconsin and I worked as a video producer, and that was another one. I'm legally blind. My partner was half deaf, so and we produce videos together, utilizing Zoom text and computers and all of the really neat stuff that had been advanced in that, since that time. After that, went back to the field in 96, and then we came back in 2000, and somewhere around 2006, 2007, I got a back to work thing from Social Security, and that's when I met Larry Roos, and we started working with Commission, and since then, they've taken, I don't know how they got my design, but one of my original designs for CCTV was a camera on an extendable arm, and so I was able to, they actually made one now, so, and it was about the same price as I could build it, so I just went ahead and they were able to get that for me, and then I connected that all to, and my laptop goes onto a base, which goes onto the same monitor as my CCTV, and so I get everything all on one screen instead of having to have two, and basically, my vision, you might not feel safe about this, but much like the last gal was skydiving, I scuba dive, but I also ride my bike. I get around, I used to draft semis, but I've gotten older and wiser since then, but so I guess that gives you a history. I don't know how many questions I can answer, but.
I do, just a little bit, if I can. If you're, I'm also a certified scuba diver, and I've been a ragbri bike ride across Iowa biker too in my earlier years. But so I got a good idea of some of the alternatives that you might use for some of those things. In your now at this point in your life in your day to day activities. What sort of techniques, low vision techniques, are or equipment or whatever are you having to make use of now, and versus non visual skills and what's you know, as some of the other people have talked about, you know, what made the determining factor. I mean, it could be as simple as you know, can I see it or not, but like when Tony was speaking, you know, it came up that sometimes it's a convenience thing. It's how fast can you actually make use of it. In his line of work, it was because of a customer service thing, he had to be so speedy with it that in his situation, it was more convenient to do it visually. But if you have any comments... along those lines.
when I was home on Corlo, I supported myself I had a construction company, and I've over the years I've rebuilt three engines and built two houses and two garages and stuff. So for a long time I had my own way of measuring things, and it was cumbersome, you know, with the idea of measuring out a tape and then marking the tape and having a marker on it so that I could go back to the saw and cut. And then I was mentioning that to Larry one day, and he took me into the shop here and showed me the measuring tool that they have now that is that's new technology since I started this whole thing. And so he was able to provide me one of those so I could continue doing my remodeling and stuff. As far as how to determine, I guess I can't tell you what I use for that distinction. It's more of what do I want to do and how do I do it, and then whatever that takes is what I do. Mm-hmm. Whether it's the low vision or just aids that we that might be available or computer technology. One of the new technologies they have now is the iPhone and the iPod and all of those things. Used to be that if I wanted to go someplace, I had to give myself at least an hour of lead time so that I could get to a particular house, because how are you going to find it? If it's in a house, the address, you're going to go up on the porch or look at the mailbox or try to figure it out. Well, now they have the maps and everything, and there's a couple of them out there that I combined with my iPod, so I don't have to pay the $30 a month fee for my phone. that will actually lead me right to the destination and give you audibles going through the, as you make your corners and stuff. Mm-hmm. The technology from when I started to where it is now, fantastic. So I can't tell you what the thing is other than the desire and the need.
Okay.
That makes a distinction.
Okay.
So when you work with your counselor, like on whatever thing, you know, whatever issues come up and you guys are trying to sort out how to best handle it, do you choose? Do you tell your counselor, I want to learn low vision techniques, I want to learn non-visual techniques, or do they offer you both, you know, a variety of options and you choose, or how does that work?
Most of the time, if I'm stumped, like with the measuring tool, Larry and I'll talk about it, and he will give me any suggestions that they might have available. And if I, most of the time, I'm actually coming to him and saying, "Can I do this?"
Okay.
And he will, and 9 times out of 10, he says, "Hey, that sounds great." And so he's been more than helpful. For instance, when I went to the University of Nebraska, by the way, I just graduated in May for got my master's degree in counseling.
Congratulations.
Awesome.
When I went to the University of Nebraska to start this whole process back in 07, they have a tremendous help set up for getting your books scanned, getting them into PDF so that you can read them off your computer, and that's my main use is to audio so that I can listen to my books. And I went into the office, I got to know the staff there quite a bit at the assistance area, and I saw what they were doing, and I went online and I found a HP scanner that scans, it'll scan a 250-page book in about 20 minutes, both sides, if you cut the back off and run the pages through, and it'll be in PDF format. Well, that's $500, so it's a lot cheaper. When I went to Grace University, they didn't have nearly the system. So I went ahead and bought the scanner, and now all my books are in an iPod and are able to be read on site, any location. Just if I pull it up and I can read it, and that's just been by virtue of watching, experiencing, and then getting great help from the commission by saying, "Hey, if your idea will help, then we'll go for it."
Marty.
Yeah.
Would it be safe to say that in choosing between low vision as opposed to non-vision technique, you make your decision based on whichever is more convenient?
Most certainly, and which will get me what I want to do, yeah.
So, Arnie, sounds like you've been around low vision for quite a while. You sound like you're pretty knowledgeable and comfortable with it. So the staff that you've interacted with thus far seem to be pretty knowledgeable about the low vision options and stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. They've been, there's the neat thing, like talking with Nancy, she has a tremendous cursory knowledge of many things, and she'll give you a range of options to research and then pick out which one is going to best serve what you're trying to do. And so then We've collaborated many times on, she would come up with a particular direction and I would find an alternative that was a little tweak different than what was offered by the suggestion she had, and then I'll give her that information and she can put that into her library, so.
Yeah, great, thanks.
Okay. Any questions?
Good job.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Did you want to ask the people that have come in since the
any questions up this topic and then we will.
So before we finish this, I guess I want to know if I could ask a question or make a comment or
you can
whatever.
Ask as many questions as you want.
Was there someone else that needs to introduce themselves though?
We're just I think that's after all this.
Okay. So anyway, so Bob, you talked about how I submitted a series of questions, you know, because I used to work for the Commission for the Blind, and I still do some consulting work, and I loved working here. I loved every Monday up until that last Monday, and I love it now still. I think we have great staff. I think we do really good work, and I really care about our staff because most of them are really, really hard workers, and they're knowledgeable, and know, with this low vision thing, I just remember some of the little things that I knew that were kind of potential cracks of what maybe some of the learning was for some of us staff. And over the last 6 months or so, you know, just I've heard little comments again by counselors, and I've called and talked to not every counselor, but I've talked to someone at every office. I've talked to, you know, supervisors. I've talked to the people out in the field. And, you know, again, in general, we really do good. And some people do very good. But, again, there's some variance in what people are doing. And I hear people saying that they need a little bit boost, like on learning how to use lighting or maybe contrast. And there's some new lighting now, the examples. I think some of the offices are now getting some samples of new lighting techniques and bulbs and stuff. And so, and we have some new staff that haven't had any training in, like, the medical causes of blindness, which can help a person kind of start figuring out what shall I suggest, you know, when you're out there guiding a person through discovering kind of what works, you know, for them, well, vision-wise. And I think it's funny. Everyone said they could use a refresher. There's some new things they need to learn. So, and there are several staff that are really good at it and say, hey, I'll help. I'll share what I know. So I'm just, that's what I would love to have happen for our staff. And I guess I wonder, is that just a suggestion that I can make and the board has to agree to it, or Pearl or Bob, you guys? Cause, and I think you guys have something with the staff meeting coming up where you're going to have some training and the diseases of the eye and stuff. So, again, just really caring about our staff, giving them the best they can, you know, have to work with. Because, you know, when they're doing the low vision stuff, you bet they're not doing evaluations. We're not prescribing. So when I put that in my list of questions, that was the wrong term because I knew we didn't do that. But, you know, we just need to tweak things now and then, refresh. So that's what I think would be great.
The word is refresh because, you know, we do low vision training is something we come back to. But of course, you know, when you hire new staff, you know, you have to kind of go back and repeat some things. Low vision is one of those things. You know, 2 years ago, we had a very good statewide training at the district level provided by Elaine Rivera, who came in from Baltimore, I believe. And she talked to us about, you know, the key elements that we should be aware of when we work with people with low vision, you know, especially in helping people use their vision using devices, aids and devices that will make things appear bigger or bolder or brighter, you know, or in some cases, less bright. And, you know, the thing is, I think what she was telling us, you know, we don't, you know, she did give us some pointers, you know, like with lighting, for example, how you position the light, you know, is like probably someone who uses light will do better if it's behind them, so it's shining down to reduce the chance of reflection or shadows or that kind of thing. Whereas you might have more problems if the light was more positioned in front of the person. You know, those kind of things are pretty simple. But I think, you know, new staff in particular are probably going to have difficulties when people persist in wanting to use their vision and they struggle with perhaps computer screens. Their vision simply isn't working. And staff people can feel frustrated because they don't know how to tell people how to use their vision to read better. You know, I saw that as one of the comments. And I think we need to go back and tell people that we really can't make that determination for people. We can show people things. We can help them explore. But ultimately, what works and what doesn't work have to be determined on an individual basis. And when the vision doesn't work, that's when you really need to understand that it's time to bring in non-visual skills. And if people really do want to explore the visual aspects of things, then I think we really need to do what we can to help them get a low vision evaluation provided by people who have the proper credentials.
I herald that, Bob. I'm just saying that some people don't seem to have the same base of knowledge.
That's what I'm trying to say. It's something we need to come back to.
Okay, very nice. I hear
well,
you.
Well, let me finish that, too. I know that at the end of February, I do have, and this is really kind of stemming from comments that people made early last fall, you know, as far as low vision evaluations in particular, but also supported employment. I'm going out to spend a day, 2 days out in North Platte. At first, it was just meant to, I was just going to meet with a couple of staff, but it has since grown to be a district thing. And low vision is one of the things we're going to talk about, you know. And I will stress a lot of the things that we have covered as a result of the focus topic here. You know, when is low vision appropriate? When is non-visual techniques more to be advised? So I think, you know, that is something we'll have to keep coming back to. We're always hiring new staff, and it's something we'll need to keep doing, you know, next year, the year after, that sort of thing.
Bob, I have 2 points. Number one, I want to stress that the state of Nebraska has at its resource for low vision the president of the Council of Citizens with Low Vision International, which is an ACB affiliate that recognizes the importance of low vision. The group has developed a best practices document when it comes to printed text and so on and so forth. I can email it to folks if they want it.
Yeah, I've got that one.
And since I have some free time on my hands through no fault of my own, I would be happy to be that resource since I am its president. To that other end, we talk about staff having knowledge, and of course staff does a good job, we all recognize that. We certify our staff with 600 hours of sleep shade training to become what's been dubbed experts in blindness, whether that's the right terminology or not, that's what's been portrayed. What certification training does the agency provide for low vision services?
We don't.
And the reason being?
Because we're not medical professionals, we don't have a curriculum for diagnosis, for determining diagnosis.
No, when I say certification in low vision, I'm talking about what certification or what basis of knowledge or what have you, how is the knowledge obtained from the resources that are out there?
I'd like to speak to that. I think Robert kind of touched on that a bit, in that certification is, with the low vision field, is not really the right term for the skills and the training that our staff are provided with. In fact, in 2002, we over time have had low vision kits in all the offices and done a lot of the different kinds of training, one-on-one with from staff to other staff, speakers coming in at district and staff meetings, and the very specific training we did 2 years ago across the state. So it's a blend and it's a mix. But in 2002, the Nebraska Board of Optometrists wrote us a letter officially. Actually, they wrote it to us and Department of Education to say that they were the eye care specialists, they were the medical people, and educators and rehab people really definitely should not be
diagnosing or prescribing low vision techniques. And so we did respond to that and explain to them how it works. And a letter, I wrote a letter to the board, which I also included.
Yeah, it was in that packet.
Sent
right.
to you.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're not certified in low vision, but we do train our people to know how to work individually with the person. You can see just of the three who spoke
right.
today, the process of figuring out what will work best for the person, both just techniques and gadgets or technology or equipment. That's very individualized,
right.
and so it's definitely true that we provide training on an ongoing basis. We're working on enhancing that even more now, but it's not new to us.
Okay.
But we're real clear that if a person needs a more medical or more diagnostic evaluation, then we'll pay for them to go for that. We'll make the referral. We'll, you know, we work with the experts.
Could you talk more about, I guess I'm not familiar with a low vision evaluation, what that includes and what the person might get out of that.
Okay.
That we would need or find useful.
Sure. I could. Bob, do you want to speak to that? Or Connie, have you taken people to... might be nice to hear from Connie, who has taken clients for those,
yeah,
right?
Yes, they usually look at the doctor's report, the eye report, to determine where to start with the person. And then... they let the person evaluate different low vision devices and usually provide some training on, you know, holding the item close to your eye and moving it away until it becomes in focus. They talk about contrast. Now I believe they're getting more into technology and what to use on computers and things, but it's they do take a look at the eye report, and they do let people try different things, and then they have some strategies for reading most effectively with low vision, and so
and maybe I'm not understanding, but it sounds like it's the same thing that they probably could have figured out at home, but it would just take a really long time and trial and error, and they just get the condensed, let's try it all, and I'll narrow down what I think is going to work. Kind
Do
of.
Do you mean from us or from?
From the low vision
from
specialist.
From the low vision clinic.
Yeah.
Yes, and they. I know that they do let people, or they used to let people borrow things to... try it.
I think they still do
to make sure that it works well in their lighting situation and things, because some things can work in the office but may not work as well at home.
I would say one big difference, though, Julie, is that the low vision clinic and the low vision experts—I forget the right word—they are going to have in their facility all kinds of equipment for people to try.
Okay.
So that it isn't a person just at home could not necessarily, they wouldn't have access to all those things. Now, for a lot of people, you don't need all that stuff. And those, you know, like mm-hmm. Marty and Stephanie have been great examples of how that works. But sometimes it's very appropriate and it's very helpful to go see all the different things.
Okay.
That's very true. And there's so many low vision providers anymore. There's, you know, hundreds in Lincoln, I think.
Really?
You know, there's quite a few. Most doctor's offices, eye doctors, have a low vision specialist on staff. So we haven't focused as much, you know, because there's other resources out there.
had that I do have a list of eye care professionals who profess to provide low vision services, and there's over 300 vendors on that list, just in Nebraska.
Who?
This Mike, the I completely hear and I have a better understanding of the approach that's taken, and I think it makes a lot of sense. The only piece that I think maybe concerns me just a little bit is back to the original center, the original training of new staff, and I realize that. And it makes sense that we're not certifying them in to be a low vision specialist, but if I was to take you literally on what's been said, they get no low vision training at all when they start as a new staff member. And well, I would think that they should get some basics.
Yeah, that isn't quite true. You know, they don't really get it while they're in center training. But during the probationary period that follows, it is, you know, they are supposed to get some in the field as the chatter with other counselors, and that's more at the office level. But I do think that there needs to be more. You know, I do think on the basis of some of the feedback that I was getting last year, what I'm trying to do in March was originally designed to help provide a little more orientation for new staff. Like I said, it's since developed more into a district meeting. And it'll be a review as well as kind of a first time setting down to talk about things like low vision. What I'm doing in February not only includes low vision, but also the role of the rehab counselor, the field of rehabilitation is art or science, you know, and are we counselors or are we therapists? Those kind of things. It's more philosophical in nature, but I think these are things that help people as they learn what is expected of them on the job. Time management is part of it too. The Rehab Act, I plan to review at least the component parts of what governs us as an agency. And I did mention supported employment too. Supported employment is a special kind of service that involves some basic philosophical issues that are different from the way we typically provide services. So I think what I'm doing in North Platte, I think I would like to see institutionalized. I haven't really discussed this on any great level, certainly not with Omaha and Lincoln, because I want to see how this goes. But I do know that the anticipation of the training as I proposed it to North Platte has been well received, and I think the people there are looking forward to it because I think they feel like they need it, you know. And so I think this is at least one step in that direction.
I have a quick question. The new staff training, the 600 hours, is that, I've kind of always understood that to mean 600 hours of actual sleep shade training, but is it all in sleep shades, or is that just 600 hours of new staff training?
The 600 hours, and let me ask, did people in the back hear what Julie said?
No.
Okay, I was afraid of that. Yeah. So let's bring the... and I'll answer it okay. I'll repeat the question as part of my answer.
That would be great.
Sorry. this is Pearl again. The 600 hours new staff training is sleep shade training, and then it's after that that they get in the field and they're learning low vision techniques.
Is the low vision portion of the training for, okay, because like the 600 hours of sleep shade training is pretty spelled out. There are very scheduled things. They go through this process. When they leave that structured 600 hours, is the next phase spelled out? You need to complete these things in these months.
Right. It's not as systematic. We do have basically a checklist of things that the new supervisor or the deputy directors are need to cover with a person. And so that gives a guideline. But I think this approach that Bob's talking about is something we're working on to really ramp up or enhance and make it more systematic. Connie, did you have something else to speak to that?
Thank you. I was just going to say that the next, you know, 2-3 months that they're on board with us, they spend most of their time shadowing other counselors to see how they do things. And I know that, you know, I'm not sure about North Platte, but I know in Omaha and Lincoln, we always make sure that they do go to a low vision evaluation, you know, to see what they do there and to learn more. So that's part of the plan.
Okay.
And Carlos wanted to comment. If
sure.
That's all right.
I just want to make a overall comment or reflection that we try to provide non-visual techniques, not because we have to, but because it's mainly not available in Nebraska. Low vision service evaluation and training is available in Nebraska. There are like 300 and plus, and Bob mentioned. So it's not that we ignore the need, but it's because it's available in the private sector. As in a state agency, we respect that, and also the professionals like Dr. Van Zandt mentioned. So we train our staff members on the resources there, and also to our clients. But this discussion is very good, and it's helping us to digest, and I think we're going to bring those concerns, comments to our staff to see what they think. Because I hear also the opposite. There is so much, we spend more money on low vision than in alternative techniques on compliance. I also hear that. I'm not saying that is the case, but we do spend a lot of money. So I just wanted to bring that portion of my thought on.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
One more comment. Also, I wanted to just remind everybody that the documents which we provided to the board prior to the meeting, they do go into more detail of what all the commission does in this focus topic, and so that those documents are part of the minutes and are posted to the website as well after the fact. So they are available to everybody later.
I guess...
I
have this thought and I can't find... Yeah. I can't frame it. So go ahead. I need a minute.
So we'll give it back to Bob for a second.
Sorry.
Okay, just a final thought. As Dr. Van Zandt was saying, you know, low vision and Connie too, as far as new staff going out with others to learn about how experienced staff provide or introduce low vision aids and devices and strategies to clients. I think the mechanical aspects of low vision services are being covered, but I think the thing that is motivating me to do this training in my plan is an understanding that even though staff may know what they are supposed to do as far as this sort of thing, there isn't enough focus on understanding why, you know. And so I appreciate the comment that Robert elicited from
from his survey of staff that sort of indicate I'm not comfortable trying to tell somebody how to use lighting, for example. And, you know, and I think we need to go back and talk to them about what they're doing when they're talking to people about low vision. You know, we're really kind of partners in an exploration of what's possible. But you know, we need to maybe talk about what it is that they're really doing. We're not spending enough time on that. You know, the processing of that part. Thank you.
I would like to mention too, Bob, and then we'll turn it back over to Julie.
Yeah, hold on 1 second.
All right. I don't need them. I've got a big enough mouth. But. Yeah. Okay. First time I've been handed the mic, I've been told I got a big enough mouth and my voice projects. But very quickly, I would like to mention very quickly that folks visit cclvi.org. On that website, every third Tuesday of the month, there is a focus call that takes place. It's called Let's Talk Low Vision with Dr. Bill. I almost said Dr. Phil. Dr. Bill. And Dr. Phil might do it too if we pay him enough. But anyway, the point of the story being is that for the entire calendar year this year, there are topics up there that are going to be discussed. We may be talking about lighting. We may be talking about when to use vision versus, you know, non-visual techniques, what font settings for computers, that sort of thing. The schedule's up there under cclvi.org under Let's Talk Low Vision. It's 7:30 Central. The dial-in number is there as well. So that's all I have.
So, Jim, your group also have a really great manual. It looks like I've read the contents of what that manual is all about. And again, it's all these low vision people putting all their thoughts together on just the whole scheme from picking a low vision specialist to dealing with glare to just the whole, you know, lifelong use of low vision stuff. So I think we should take a look at that manual. It's a download. For members, it's $5. For non-members, it's $20. So, Pearl, if I download one of those, I get reimbursed, right?
Sure. Or I wonder if we should purchase it for the...
It would be $20 if the agency wanted to purchase it.
Uh-huh.
And I could see to it that you get a copy.
And then we could... Could we distribute that or share that or...
I personally don't see why you couldn't. I mean, I will double check and get back. I don't personally see why, if you download a copy, why Wes, with his technical expertise, couldn't somehow fudge the system. And
we'll work on the details of it at later.
Right. But no, we'll do that. Yes.
We'll do that. Thank you.
All right.
Want the mic back, Julie?
Sure.
There you go.
It's 10:20.
Okay. Are there any final questions from commissioners before I go to public comment? Any other questions? Thank you very much, Bob, and thank you to our three speakers. I'm not sure if they're still here, but thanks.
Two of them are blessed.
Okay.
They got bored.
So we'll go ahead and move on to public comment. So are there people who have questions or would like to comment? It can be about what we've just talked about or any aspect of the agency that you would like to.
Jeff Altman.
Okay.
Let me get the microphone.
There's one. Let's
Mark
do
Bulger.
Mark, okay. All right. Well, we'll do Jeff and Mark, and then we'll see if anybody else wants to go. All right, Jeff, we'll be first.
And Marty Ackerman.
Did you hear Marty?
Yeah, yeah. I got in there.
Yeah, Marty. Yeah. Mark.
And just as a reminder, during the public comment, if you decide you want to speak up, go ahead and say your name when somebody takes a breath. And Julie and Mike will get you on the list.
In that case, I'll avoid breathing.
Thank you.
Well, aside from my role with the National Federation of Blind in Nebraska, I'm also an orientation mobility instructor on my during some of the other hours of my life. Part of what we have to understand is the difference between gut reaction, best guess, and informed choice. And a lot of folks, when they come in for rehabilitation, are at that gut reaction level. They're losing something, they want it back. And there are definitely devices that for some folks will give some of that back. There are also situations where people have been dealing with these for a while, and their response is, well, okay, I need to read my dollar bills, or you know, the money that I'm handling in my business. And so maybe the best thing for me to do is to have a CCTV, since I can't hold it up and visually see it. Well, that certainly does the job, but then you have this device sitting on the counter that isn't very mobile. Or maybe there's some other device that is mobile, but the battery dies on a regular basis. So the possibility of looking for other alternatives may not be looked at. Informed choice is about having complete information about what is going to be effective, efficient, and safe. So now, speaking in my area of expertise, which is in teen travel, it is very possible for some folks who have lost some vision to go with that gut reaction and move around effectively, efficiently, and safely. But it kind of depends on things like lighting. There are folks that if they go from being out in the bright light to a dimly lit building, their vision doesn't work right away. And in most cases, that may not be a problem unless there's a flight of steps going down right immediately in front of them when they step through that door. So the real role of what is done in an orientation center where a person is going through full immersion is to develop a complete set of non-visual skills. And you can't learn those in 5 minutes or 5 days. It takes 6 to 9 months to really master those skills so that you can then judge those against low vision techniques. So if a person has a complete body of knowledge of what works for them and how to use non-visual techniques, and they believe in those techniques, they know they're going to work for them, they can make a genuine informed choice about whether they're going to use a low vision technique or if they're going to use a non-visual technique. And they'll be able to make a pretty much a seamless transition from one to the other when they're in a circumstance where their vision isn't working for them. And that's what being blind is. It doesn't mean that you don't have any vision at all, as all of you know. It means not having reliable vision. It may work great in a room well lighted. It may not work at all in a room that's a little bit dimly lighted. And we want people to have a complete set of skills when they go out in the world. Now, as for the agency attempting to do some type of low vision work or low vision evaluations, I personally feel that that's better left to people who are professionals in that field. It's much better for the agency to refer people to a low vision clinic with someone there that has that particular expertise, and then take those recommendations and try to help the person implement that in their daily lives. That way, you're really getting the best possible choices of things. Now, I think it's very important for the staff of the agency to be familiar with all the different things that are available in terms of low vision. But I don't think it's a situation where someone from this agency should be showing up at somebody's house with a suitcase full of magnifiers and saying, well, let's try this and let's try this. I think that's really the role of the professional in the field of low vision.
Mark, who's next?
Mark Bulger.
Yes. Thank you, Jeff.
Hello, this is Mark Bulger. First of all, welcome Robert and Becky to the board. Thank you for your commitment to serve the consumers like myself and others. We appreciate that, and also was inspired by Marty and Antonio and Stephanie. They're examples of success stories that the Nebraska Commission for Blind and Visually Impaired can offer, and it served as an incentive for others to be successful like them. When I hear the word Nebraska Commission for Blind and Visually Impaired, that represents a potential service for 30,000 to 60,000 people in Nebraska that are either blind or visually impaired. Of that, probably 10,000 is considered legally blind. Of the legally blind, maybe 2,000 to 3,000 maybe have total blindness or dark perception. One out of seven of that population experiences vision loss or blindness as a child. A lot of vision loss occurs as an adult. When I hear the term low vision, to me, and what I've read is it is the utilization and optimization of existing vision with adaptive devices and alternative techniques. To do that, we have to examine, why does the commission exist? Why is it publicly funded? Is it because the public says, oh, there's these poor blind and visually impaired people, we feel sorry for them, we want to give them money? No, that's not the case. What it is they realize if they invest money to help them, they can, one, live independently, which is, I guess, a goal for everybody. And secondly, and I think ICDIS agency has a strong emphasis on is getting them rehabilitated and back into the workforce. And when you do that, obviously, it not only helps that person, you've generated less of a burden on society, and also you have productive citizens that are giving back. So as we look at low vision, we need to look at it in the context of not, you know, from a eye doctor's perspective that says, here, you know, these things will help you. Yes, that's important, but we need to translate that into how do we take low vision into the rehabilitation process. Because even as Antonio said, that he made informed choices because he was successfully trained 6 to 9 months at the orientation center here. Now, another thing that we need to consider is we have a statewide agency that serves hundreds, maybe up to 1,000 people, and we have an orientation center that serves, I don't know how many years, but maybe our capacity is 15 at one time. So we have to say, okay, I heard a lot of good things about the orientation center, but as a public agency that serves a statewide need, is informed choice instruction discovery, while it's the best, is that practical and efficient in all cases? And again, to me, it goes back to how do we make as many blind and visually impaired people live as independently as possible so that they can live in their communities and not be a burden on taxpayers? And then, even more importantly, is how do we help them find, you know, gainful employment? And to me, what that says is we need specialists, not in low vision, but specialists in low vision rehabilitation. And we need training to take that gap from, you know, we've got these adaptive technology devices and things, how do we integrate that into the home place and in the workplace? You know, when I hear the words trial and error, I get that. A lot of things, it's not a perfect world, but with specialized training and with the qualifications that may be out there, we can mitigate or minimize the amount of time, trial and error. And what that does is to save time and money. And when I hear error, I hear failure. And sometimes when you fail, you don't get a second chance. So, you know, my concern is that I've heard a lot of people have had access to a lot of different devices, but is that true statewide? Do we have the resources to reach every one of those potential people that seek the services to remain more independent and seek employment? So to me, I think there needs to be an emphasis on developing that specialty of not low vision specialists, but low vision rehabilitation specialists. And Nebraska is not the only state in the country. We're not the only public agencies. We need to look what other states are doing, what other certifications are available. I applaud what's going on now. When I started coming here, you know, 8 years ago to the first meeting, I didn't hear a lot of discussion about low vision. I hear that now. I hear some honest and concerned discussion, but, you know, let's try to get from the trial and error field to, you know, let's make some accurate assessments. I look at you guys as the doctors of vocational rehabilitation. If you went to a doctor and he needed some assistance. He says, well, I got this drawer stuff, but we're going to trial and error. You know, you hope that he had some measurement tools to diagnose what you have, and then take that information and make some educated assumptions and say, you know, based on my training, these are things that we can do. And I know you guys do that in a way. I'm not saying that you're not doing that, but we need to be very intentional because, you know, sometimes not everybody needs 9 months of structured discovery training. Sometimes, you know, just the right device will keep them in the workforce. So, and us having as many qualified people talking with the potential clients will get more people living independently and more people back to work. So thank you.
Thank you. And I think Marty is next.
And the field services really ties into that. And although the center was talked about a fair amount, also I think all the people that spoke did talk about the what they had worked on and received from Larry and Nancy and people in Omaha. Here's Marty.
Like I said, I've been around the commission for quite a while, and I've got to know and I've worked with and met a lot of counselors, and I feel sorry for their responsibility minus their abilities, in the sense that I hadn't heard the restrictions on them being not diagnosing and all of the stuff that's out there. And though I agree with it, I recognize that that's probably the source of the tremendous amount of timidity that I've witnessed in counselors. There's a certain level of resistance to give direct advice because of that. And I think that there's a huge portion of this of the service that's being overlooked, and unless I am unaware of it being in existence. We as clients, I don't know about Stephanie or Antonio or others, but myself, we would be more than happy to participate in a connection between, if a counselor meets a client that's either got similar eye vision or vision situation or similar personality. I don't know, I can't speak for all the other clients, but out of 10,000, I'm certain there's few that would be more than happy to function as a opportunity for the new client or somebody coming into the system to ask questions that will be able to give free opinions without that constraint saying, oh, you're diagnosing. And that kind of a forum would be, in my book, would be tremendous.
I agree.
Oliver.
Okay, so, yeah, the next...
But if you want to speak, you have to say your...
Yeah, name. I have to hear it. So I heard Tony.
Katie.
And Katie.
Barbara.
And Barbara. And Brad. Okay, let's do those four. We'll start with Tony.
Oh, I'm Brad. Okay.
So I've heard a lot of good comments this morning and a lot of people talking about knowing when residual vision is effective and when it's not. Just a cautionary tale, having been through a low vision evaluation for an on-the-job function, sometimes if you're not careful, the solution can get pushed to using the residual vision at the cost of effectiveness and expediency. The specific task we were looking at was how to identify printer cartridges if working in an IT shop at the time. And the specialist solution was a magnifier that clipped onto my already Coke bottle-sized glasses, along with a portable CCTV. At this point, I could identify the printer cartridge box, but it took about 90 seconds per box, when really a better and more efficient solution would have been for myself and my team to just sort the stupid things when they came in into their own containers, and it would have taken about 10 seconds to find a cartridge. So just a word of caution to the agency is you are working with low vision specialists to ensure that the consumer understands that, you know, residual vision is an option, but effectiveness and expediency are also important when it comes to looking at the particular alternative technique.
Thank you. And that's something I had thought of earlier, but I suspect it's going to vary from low vision specialist to low vision specialist, and And the thing is, that's what they do. So, of course, that's what they're going to suggest. So.
Who's next?
Katie.
Yep.
She's the wall there.
Over by
against
the
wall. Oh, I'm sorry.
There's a
thing. I think it's
that
Katie.
Oh, yeah,
yeah.
Two
Katie's. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
You didn't know?
Becky's not.
My name is Katie, and I have low vision. And I am acutely aware of being a senior that seniors, many of them, have a great deal of fear and resistance to adapting. And my vision has been declining significantly. I have been to 3 retinal specialists who have never, ever suggested any types of adaptive technology to me. My greatest help has been from the low vision clinic and the ophthalmologist there, and the other counselors there who have introduced me to some tools and things. And at the low vision clinic, the greatest help to me has been the support groups where we share things that we have learned through a process of trial and error that work for us. Right now, I'm in what I call my adapt mode because my vision has recently taken another nosedive. And I was fortunate to go to University of Nebraska many years ago when they had just opened the home management house for handicapped people. So I have come from a background of thinking of adaptive technology, and I have been very blessed with that experience because that's just the way I think. You know, I learned to do that years ago, raising kids, how to dovetail tasks, blah, blah, blah. But I know how many seniors can be very hesitant, and they tend to just curl up in a corner and, for the most part, croak and live very sheltered lives and be fearful of getting out amongst people. And I think that's one of the things that we need to really focus on for the seniors who are losing their vision due to macular degeneration and diabetic retinopathy, which is the cause of my vision loss, and other people who have genetic disorders that are progressively diminishing their vision. And what works for young people who are more flexible and tend to be more optimistic and are needing an employment is not the same as what works for seniors who are on fixed incomes, who no longer have jobs and maybe never had jobs if they're in my chronologically gifted area.
I love that.
And so the approach has to be different, I believe, as opposed to younger people who are maybe much more optimistic and needing employment. So that's just my comments from my experience and the fact that I hang out with chronologically gifted people.
Thanks, Katie.
Thanks for the cover-up. We'll pay you later.
And I also like to add, old is a state of mind, and I'm not moving to that state.
Thank you. We're to Barbara.
Barb, yeah.
Barbara? No, I didn't have.
Okay.
Okay, this is Barbara Lowe's, and when we were talking about various resources that are available, and when Katie was just talking about networking, I think those are both really important, and I encourage the commission to continue to look to various resources on the subject of low vision. I'm a member of the National Federation of the Blind, and at www.nfb.org, there is a section in the publications specifically on low vision, and it offers articles not only for specific age groups, like there are some materials for children, also for seniors, but then there are some things that are just general articles, like for people with recent vision loss, or also a brochure for seniors, a packet for seniors. When to Stop Relying on Low Vision and Low Vision Aids is an article that is available. And Adjusting to Low Vision and Common Disorders of the Eye. I mean, those are just examples of things, and I always encourage people to read up on things, whatever they are, and to get different perspectives, because that can help folks go from the gut reaction or the best yes to the informed choice, like Jeff was talking about a moment ago. Thank you.
Thank you. And then Brad. I'm pretty sure there's only one Brad.
Is there?
I have just a comment. This is Connie. And I had said that the low vision providers will, you know, try different magnifiers with the people. And that seems like trial and error, too, in a respect. But that's what all the eye doctors do, because they can't see how you see. And so when I go to the eye doctor and they're letting me check out lenses, they might have a basis for where they should start, but it's always up to me to determine what's clear and what isn't clear, and things like that.
Is it better one or two?
Same.
Was there, Julie said she thought Brad wanted to speak.
Yeah.
Brad, did you want to speak?
No, I didn't have one.
Thank you. Was there anybody else then?
He did say.
Okay, I hear Karen.
Yeah.
And if there's anyone that hasn't had a chance to speak that would like to, I'll take those. But so just Karen. Okay, we'll do Karen, and then we're going to go to break.
Yeah.
I'm going to make this real short and sweet. I appreciated what Katie said before about differing levels of optimism. I've seen young people who I work with be very pessimistic as well about their vision loss, and I think something that works wonders for anyone is positive mentoring, positive peers, and a positive outlook on what you're going to be doing. For a senior, maybe that's going to be taking care of your grandkids, or my grandma likes to garden, so maybe it would be gardening or cooking, baking bread, whatever that's going to be. It's going to be different for every person. But the positivity that we find here at our commission, I think, is really, really invaluable.
Thank you.
Break.
Thank you.
Okay. Did everybody...
They don't hear you.
No.
They should.
You should speak up.
We did introductions this morning, and I think
more people have come in since then, and we need to get those people to introduce themselves. So I'm going to give this to Connie. Thanks.
My name is Lincoln, new casualty of our wonderful cab service. That's why we're late.
Oh,
right.
Brad Rose, also from Lincoln. I'm related to her.
My choice?
Yes. Sharon went for her, and I had to help take care of my dad, so that's why I didn't come right away.
Okay.
My name is Norm Tigros, and people here from Omaha.
As long as he's spelling can't be in his name.
I believe I introduced myself. My name is Barbara from Omaha.
Yeah, you guys did.
The person beside Carlos can introduce
me. Zach.
Hi, I'm Zach Hay from Lincoln, and a member of the National Parish in the Bond of Lincoln.
Okay. Thank you. And now we'll do a break until 11. Yeah. Well, so we'll reconvene at 11. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks.